You guys are all nuts. Every single one of you. Right? 3 hours on Monday, 8 hours today. Why would you listen to anything I said?
NFL Network draft analyst Mike Mayock, podium A.
You guys are crazy.
Podium A.
So am I. I think it just shows why quarterbacks should work out at this thing. And they all did. All the ones that could work out did today. We got a really good look at all of them. They threw the route tree like they usually do. I thought the two top guys, I thought Winston and Mariota were outstanding. The thing that I like about Jameis Winston is I think he throws an extremely catchable ball. He's got all the arm strength you want, but he makes it easy for the receiver based on the route. He understands that. He gets it. I think just naturally and innately he gets it. What I liked about Mariota was just the footwork. You can see how athletic he is. You know, he ran the 4.5, whatever he ran. But you can see that translate to his dropbacks now, sense of urgency with his feet. I think you can see, and he'll be able to adapt to being able to get under center. It's the pocket awareness part that you can't tell out here. Physically, he'll be able to do all the things they ask him. And I think the guy that's just a beautiful, natural thrower of the football is Petty. And do I have a whole bunch of questions about him, pocket awareness? Absolutely. But if you were just going to stand there and play catch in the backyard or play a 7-on-7, that's my guy. He throws a beautiful football. Brandon Bridge is who I thought he was. And that is he's a tall drink of water with a whip. He's got not much of a clue about footwork. He gets out of position a lot. His accuracy is all over the place, but he's a kind of guy you'd like to work with.
Mike, how does Leonard Williams rank versus some of the other premier defensive linemen that have come out recently?
It's really early in the process. I compare him to Richard Seymour, who's one of my favorite five techniques of all time. And Richard Seymour could play up and down the line of scrimmage in any front, three-man front, four-man front, it didn't matter. He could play every single position, and that's who I think Leonard Williams is, a guy with versatility. He's gifted. He can play outside. He can play inside, and it doesn't matter. He's scheme diverse. So every team at the top end will be looking at him.
Right. The Senior Bowl was the first time he actually ever done his play call.
Right.
Someone reiterated the question, said, you never done play calls. He said, no, it's been all signal calling throughout his time in college. Is that a non-issue?
No, it's a big deal. And if you heard Bruce Arians yesterday, the day before, he basically said, hey, a lot of these college quarterbacks, all 11 guys look over at the sideline. They hold up the cards, lift the leg, snap the ball. And Bruce Arians said, that's not quarterback. That's not a leader. You know, we're looking for leaders. You know, and you can't kill a kid that hasn't had to make a play call. He's doing what his coaches ask him to do, right? So you can't kill the kid. However, it's a huge transition. So I try to give the analogy. Basically, you're talking about taking a kid that's in kindergarten and moving him to a college-level class almost overnight. That's how hard it is to pick up the verbiage, to go under center, to footwork. So here's the deal. So you're a shotgun quarterback, right? So you stand there, you lift your leg,
LSU
and the ball comes
back
up.
Collins,
and all you do is
C.
catch,
LSU
rock, and throw.
Collins,
that's what you do.
C.
Every once in a while, you'll do a three-step drop where you catch and go 1-2, bang. However, in the NFL, what is it? It's five-step, it's seven-step, it's all these. So these guys that just catch, rock, and throw, they've never had any footwork, and you can see it. So the fact that you could start with, you got to call a play and you've never done that. You go in a huddle, you've never done that. You got to get a ball under center, which you've never done. The footwork is just completely new to you. When you add it all up, man, it's no wonder guys that come out of these systems, sometimes it takes them a while to learn how to play the game in the NFL. Which one? Bryce Petty's got a long way to go. As much as I like him, what I said on the air today, that his TCU game to me was a microcosm of his entire career, and he threw five or six beautiful deep balls. I had all kinds of problems with him in the pocket, where if the first read wasn't there, he pulled it down, then he was indecisive, then he made a bad throw. And as much as I'm killing him for the TCU game, he put 61 points on the board and won the game. So how do you kill him, right? But he's got so far to go. As far as climbing pocket, understanding how to get to the second receiver, throwing a guy open, it's a project, and I don't think it's a one-year project. Over here?
Yeah. Hey, Mike, your impressions of the big Georgia Tech receiver,
Fowler and how tough it is to evaluate him and Smelter coming out of the Texas.
The big kid Waller I saw at the East-West game, and he ran well today. You know, he's 6'6 and change and ran really fast. So you want to like him. The issue I had with him at the East-West game was when they did the red zone drills live, man-to-man coverage, right? A lot of the smaller D-backs were ripping the ball out of his hands. And if you're a big 6'6 guy like he is, that's where he's going to make his money, in the red zone and outside the numbers. So if 5'10 D-backs are ripping the ball out of your hands, you got a problem. So his hands have to get stronger. But he's the kind of guy you'd like to work with. The Smelter kid, who obviously is hurt, he's intriguing because I don't think he's twitchy, but he's athletic. And there's a difference. He's the baseball kid. He's kind of a powerful kid with some run after the catch, natural hands. You can see him track the ball in the air like a baseball player. So I like him. I don't know how much the injury is going to hurt him or not. Over time, you know, and he's a little bit raw.
Mike, I think you've mentioned that you want to see him like 40 pounds. What does that do for him, you think?
I was intrigued by all three. My top three receivers are pretty much everybody's top three, right? Kevin White's been my guy since the first time I put tape on, and I think Amari Cooper's the safe choice. He's like Torrey Holt, Amari Cooper. I mean, just everything's smooth and easy. However, what I see with White is a higher ceiling. I see a bigger guy that runs faster. So I was hoping he'd run 4.45, 4.46, somewhere in that range, and he runs 4.35, and he made everything look easy. And I just talked to some coaches walking off the field, and I was like, what'd you think of White? Every single one was like, wow, it was easy. Great hands, exploded in every drill, the run. So if you start taking a look at Oakland at number four, and if they go for the wide receiver, I think it's wide open right now with Parker, Cooper, and White. Well, he's 25 pounds heavier, and he moves just as well. He played 80% of the snaps for Washington, which is highly atypical for a 340-pound guy. He went sideline to sideline. He reminds me of Haloti Ngata. Brown, I love. I mean, I got a first-round grade on Brown, so it's not like I dislike him. I just have him behind Shelton. Brown's a guy I think will go a little bit later. I think he'll go in the 20 to 32 range, 320 pounds. He's a natural three technique that they can move inside if they want, but he's not quite as explosive a guy, both in the run and pass game, in my opinion, as Shelton. I'm sorry?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I thought he looked good, and I tried to stay. You know, I don't get carried away too much with this. It's a cross check for me, you know. So DGB, when I watched every target he had in 2013, and the comment I made is he has no clue what he's doing, but he still tilted the field just because of his height, weight, speed. And that's kind of what I saw today. You know, he has no idea what he's doing, but he catches the ball well. He's 6'5", whatever, and he runs 4'5", or better. And some teams are going to have a tough decision to make on him, you know, and what kind of kid he is. And Shane Ray, I'm excited about tomorrow. I think it's the best edge class we've had since 2011. 12 and 13 weren't that great. And when I say edge, I mean defensive end or outside linebacker. Whoever's rushing a quarterback, I'm qualifying this year as an edge guy. And I think Dante Fowler, Shane Ray, and Randy Gregory are three outstanding edge guys. The kid from Kentucky, Dupree, I want to see him. There's a whole class of guys down through the second, third, and fourth rounds coming off the edge that I think are going to be fun. So tomorrow we're going to begin to differentiate some of those guys. What's that?
You said in your conference call on Monday that you didn't expect a big trade market number two. Having both quarterbacks play well, show well here, and also reportedly interview well with teams, do you feel like that changes that at all, or are you steady?
I just think that if you ask me that question in a vacuum, it's different than if you're asking me if number five can move up to number two or number six can move to two as opposed to 20 move to two. You know what I mean? So is there value sitting at two for Tennessee? Absolutely. You know, I mean, if a quarterback goes at one and they're sitting at two and they're okay with Zach Mettenberger, then yeah, the store's open. Let's see if we can barter a little bit. But Tennessee's got a tough decision to make. You know, they might want that quarterback. So I still think we won't know a thing going up till the first day of the draft. That's part of the intrigue of it. But yeah, I still think there could be play at two, no doubt.
With all the work you did on Winston coming in, was there something that you wanted to see? Did you see it, or did you just want to see it?
Yeah, I think we kind of overemphasize the combine. I tried to say that in the conference call the other day, in that for me it's a cross-check. And the 50 hours of film work or whatever I did on Winston is not going to be overwhelmed by 20 throws out here today. But what I like is when a quarterback is not, and Tony Dungy said this to me years ago when he was coaching. He was like, we want bright lights kids, guys that aren't afraid to get out there with 32 NFL head coaches and general managers and just rip it. Who cares? Just get out there and rip it. And that's what I try to tell all the kids that ask me if they should throw at the combine. I'm like, yeah. They don't really care if you throw an incomplete pass. They're smart enough people to understand you've never seen the wide receiver before. So a lot of times the agents or their parents or whatever say, oh, no, don't. Just get out there and rip it. And that's what they did today. So it's just another check. Bang. The kid wasn't afraid. He looked great. He was smiling. I thought it was awesome. Yeah, I think you can. I think you can get him at 40-something, too. I mean, you can get Preston Smith from Mississippi State in the second round, perhaps, who's a 4-3 hand-in-the-ground defensive end. It's a really good football player. Odigizuwa, I don't know, from UCLA, he might go in the second round somewhere. I mean, there's a better edge class, and I'm including 4-3 defensive ends and 3-4 linebackers in that group. There's a better edge class than we've seen in recent years. No, Shaq ought to say what he wants to say. I mean, God bless him. I love watching his tape. You know, and I think that's part of what makes him so interesting for all these teams is he can play so I see him as a safety that plays dime linebacker. I talked to a couple GMs that are even looking at him at tailback. He's been a linebacker, and that's comfortable for him. So I think the value to Shaq Thompson as a defensive player is you don't put a label on him. Okay, because he's going to be a three-down player, and it really doesn't matter where you line him up because he's going to be a good three-down player.
What do you think of Paul Dawson and how big are the red flags?
I freaking love Paul Dawson as a football player, and I don't know much about him off the field. And the first – what I like about things, when I first get the first tapes in and I start – you know, I don't know a thing about most of these kids off the field. I just throw the tape in, and the tape doesn't lie. And that kid is as instinctive, quick, and downhill a linebacker as I've seen in years. And his tape against, I want to say, Minnesota was so much fun to watch. Three-down linebacker, can get overwhelmed at times by a big body, but he reacts so quickly that he's able to get under or over the top and still make a play. He's great in pass coverage. Somebody's going to be real happy with him as a 4-3 will linebacker or perhaps even an inside guy, depending on what you play. Love him. I think right now long corners are in, and it makes sense. When you're drafting Kelvin Benjamin and you're drafting Mike Evans and all those big wideouts who are making immediate impacts, you're looking for longer corners. So Trey Wayans is a longer corner. He comes out of a program that I have a lot of respect for on the defensive side of the football. You know what you're getting. You know, I felt the same way about Denard last year, except this kid's longer. So I think you know what you're getting. The Peters kid from Washington will find out a lot more, I think, as the process goes on of him off the field. He's a similar guy who's very confident in press coverage. I think the dark horse here a little bit is the LSU kid, Jalen Collins, who I didn't know much about until a couple of weeks ago when I watched his tape, and I went, wow, kid started 12 games or whatever in his career, and he's a first-round physical trait corner who I got to learn a lot more about, but he's similar. So those three, and then maybe even P.J. Williams from Florida State, you throw them all in the mix, there's a bunch of good long corners at the top end of this draft.
What evaluation of Devin Smith and what range do you perceive him?
A lot of wideouts this year, man. I mean, just like last year. And I have a second round, or you said Devin Smith. I have a second round grade on Devin Smith, and he ran, I believe, in the low to mid 4.4s today. I thought he was going to go under 4.4. Just, I'll tell you what he does better than any wide receiver I've seen in several years is he tracks the deep ball. And if you look at his average per catch at 28 or whatever it is, big play guy. Defensive backs were literally lining up 7 yards off and turning and running. They were so worried about getting beat deep, and he still beat them deep, and he tracks the deep ball. There's value to that. So I really like him. The thing about this draft is I don't know where Funchess is going or what he's going to be. I don't know where DGB, Green Beckham, is going. Or I don't know any of the – Rashad Perryman, who didn't work out today because of an – he's another guy that if he tests well – you can make a conversation about him in the first round. And then you start talking about your guy, Devin Smith, or Philip Dorsett. were those kinds of guys, and it's exciting how deep you can get in this wide receiver class again with quality players.
Okay, Mike, since you're talking about the wide receivers and size, the biggest knock on Tyler Lockett is his size. How much did today's workout help him?
Well, I thought what it did was differentiate himself from, quote, slot receivers. So if you're going to put him in there with Jamison Crowder from Duke, and I had him slotted in there together kind of, and I knew off tape that Crowder was going to be quicker than fast, and I thought Lockett was going to run fast. And that's what happened today. Crowder was like 4.56 plus or minus. And that's what – so Crowder's kind of a slot receiver with great return skills. Lockett, by virtue of running 4.4 and being a little bigger, is a slot. He's outside. He's a return guy. He helped himself because he ran 4.44, no doubt about it. I don't overreact to them at all. I mean, and I think the biggest mistake sometimes people make or teams can make is just overreacting for good, better or worse to a 40 time or a measurable and get carried away with a 4.4 with a 42-inch vert and all the rest of that stuff. You got to go back to the tape, and I trust the tape. I trust my own eye, and I know that Abdullah and I know that Duke Johnson – are quicker than fast, explosive specialty players who aren't three-down guys that if you put the ball in their hands, they're special and they make people miss.
Mike, how important is true multi-gap defensive linemen, how important are multi-gap defensive linemen for the NFL, and who are the true multi-gap guys that you see in this class?
Well, we mentioned Leonard Williams. He can play anywhere. What's important in today's NFL is that there aren't – yeah, you're in a base 3-4, you're in a base 4-3, but you play so much sub in today's NFL. And anywhere from – you know, I asked a coach last night who I was having dinner with. I said, how often were you in sub last year? And he said 67% of the time, and we're at the low end of the league. So if you're talking about 67 up to plus or minus 75 to 80% in sub, then what's important? That fifth defensive back is important, and the interchangeable parts are important up front. So that especially in today's tempo world of football, where you don't have time to run guys in and off the field, your linemen have to be in shape and able to play more than one gap. They've got to be able to play up or down. They've got to play inside or out. So, yeah, I mean, if I look at my – I can go through all my lists and tell you, you know, I think this guy can do this and this guy can do that. If there's 323 guys in there, and I'm not going to lie to you, I haven't seen tape on all of them. So, I mean, when you look at the defensive line list, Leonard Williams, multi-gap guy. Shelton is mostly a nose, but he's quick enough to play some three technique. Malcolm Brown's more of a three tech. Eric Armstead from Oregon, I think, is intriguing. He could be an up and down the line of scrimmage player for anybody, and I think he's a baby. He's 20 years old and is going to grow into that huge body. No, the Oregon guy. Which Mississippi State guy, you're talking about Preston Smith or Caleb Ewells? Preston Smith, to me, is more of a base 4-3 end. I think you can kick him inside on sub, but he's a base 4-3 guy. So there's a bunch of these guys I could go through, but I need to move on here a little bit.
Who's Mike, is there any of those guys in that next tier quarterbacks after Winston and Mariota that can come in and make an impact immediately, or are they all developmental guys?
You know, your guess is as good as mine, is as good as the guy with the third-round pick or the second-round pick in the draft. And my take – personally, is that after the first two guys, there's nobody ready to step in and play. And I told you how impressed I was with Bryce Petty's arm today. He throws a beautiful football. I don't think he's ready to play. And here's the other thing, and anybody who was on the call the other day heard me say this. I talked to Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Matt Ryan, Breeze. I've asked over the last 4 or 5 years how much of pocket awareness is innate and how much can be learned. And I think it's critical. And the answer all those guys gave me was pretty much, yeah, you can learn some things about protecting the football, feeling a rush, dropping that shoulder, protecting the football with two hands, repping things out like that. But when it comes to pure pocket awareness, and Kurt Warner defined it today as an ability to keep your eyes up as you're subtly moving in the pocket, and Kurt Warner was one of the best of all time, right? And I asked Kurt, can you learn, or were you born with that? And he said, Mike, 95% of it I was born with. And so if that's the case and you're looking at the spread quarterbacks, right, and I can't watch them do any of that, I have no idea how much pocket awareness they have or don't have. All I can do is judge the individual components of feet, legs, arm strength, athletic. It's so hard. That's why in the old days we're saying first-round quarterbacks are kind of 50-50. I think it's even tougher now because of the spread. So that's a long way of saying that I think Petty is a year or two away. Hundley's a couple years away. We didn't get to see Garrett Grayson today. I think they're all down the road a little bit.
Mike, what's your take on
Yeah, I believe that Gurley and Gordon are both first-round running backs, and even though the draft has been devalued for at that position, I think this year or any year, those two are really special, obviously with the caveat Gurley's ACL and where the medical stands.
What do you see from Nick Marshall,
though, quarterback? I don't see him as a quarterback, and I don't think most of the league does. I'm evaluating him as a corner. He ran in, I think, 4.6 and 4.58 or somewhere in that range today, if I remember correctly. He's long. He's athletic. He's got a long way to go as a corner. But he's the kind of guy that you want to take and develop in a later round if possible. And I think that's what's going to happen. He's doing well. He's doing very well in the interviews. People are highly impressed with his football IQ, and I've been hearing that a little bit coming out of Tallahassee that, take away all the off-the-field stuff for a second. Just move that to one side. If you do that, his football IQ is as good as anybody over the last couple of years. He's great on the board. Steve Mariucci, our guy from the network, put him on a whiteboard last night, said he was the best one he's been involved with in the last several years on the whiteboard. So apparently he's been interviewing well, and the football IQ is really good. So the question really does become, how much do you care or not care at the end of the day about all the off-the-field stuff? Tomo, you can't judge it. I can't judge it. We don't have the access, to these kids that the teams do. So I knew yesterday when he stood up here, he was going to say, hey, my bad. I take full responsibility. But let's not look back. Let's look forward. That's, I think, what anybody would say, and that makes sense. So it's really hard for all of us who don't have access to the team's individual security reports, the team's psychological reports. And trust me, this is ironic, but it's true. Some of what happens with this kid, depending on how much teams value the input of psychologists, and they all use the testing. And, if I'm an owner in today's NFL, I would demand testing on these high-level guys that have had issues off the field. And I would want to see the results, because the whole thing about predictive behavior, whether a guy's going to do what he did in the past or not, is pretty important here. And all these psychological reports, again, which we have no idea what it says, I think the owners ought to be sitting down and going over with the general managers and the head coaches.
If you're looking for a solid, steady 4-4, three down linebacker, three forward side, how do you see Kendrick, Perryman, and how do you see those guys?
Yeah, I think they're different. I love the tape of Perryman, and I love the tape of Kendricks. And the reason I like it's a little bit, and I'm not trying to compare them to Chris Borland or to Keekly. I'm comparing the motor and the production at the college level on tape. They're fun to watch. It's like the Dawson kid. They just get to the football. They're so quick in their decision-making and instinct. So Perryman and Kendricks are more athletic. They're more twitchy. They're better in the pass game, although sometimes Perryman's not in on third down, and that's what I got to check with Miami a little bit. But then you get the big kid from, Bernardrick McKinney. He's different. He's 6'4", 249, body beautiful, looks good, but he's more mechanical. Downhill thumper, not as good laterally and on the move as those guys. So it depends what you're looking for and what your scheme demands.
What kind of pass defense can Perryman look like?
Ken Perryman?
Yeah.
The Miami kid?
Yeah.
That's one of my questions, is that when I watch the tape, he's not always in on third down, and I wonder why. So I've got to do some more work both on his tape and in the University of Miami building. Carl Davis flashed this year at Iowa. You watch the tape and you go, man, he's around a lot of plays, but he's not making all the ones you want to see. He's big. He's got athletic movement skills. He ought to make more plays. Then he went to the Senior Bowl where, on the one-on-one stuff, he looked great. He was named the Senior Bowl Player of the Week at Thursday Night Banquet. So Carl Davis has first-round size and athletic ability. He's just got to put it together more consistently.
Mike, Shaq Thompson is a guy you have at great as a safety. He stood over there and firmly said he's not a linebacker. I'm not doubting him.
Yeah, I answered this a couple minutes ago. The bottom line is that I think his versatility is a plus. So I give him credit. He can say he's whatever he is. And the point that I was trying to make is that if you're evaluating him as a defensive player, it doesn't matter what you call him, because in sub packages, which is anywhere from 60 to 80%, I'm going to have him at sub linebacker anyway. I'm going to have him at that dime linebacker, right? So where are you lining him up on first down? Are you lining him up at will linebacker? Are you lining him up at strong safety? It doesn't matter that too much. It's just how whatever fits in your scheme. So in my head, I see Deion Buchanan from last year, who on first down was a strong safety and on all the sub packages did a great job as a dime linebacker. So I think in today's NFL, it's less about the label and more about how valuable this kid can become to a defense.
In the next 3 months, if Mariota does anything that would make it less of a projection?
You know what, Zach? It's just really all about, at the end of the day, whether or not a team will buy into or to what level they'll buy into the kid. And I think he'll do an awful lot in interviews and on the board and watching tape. You're going to want to buy into him. So it's a projection, whether you like it or not. You can't do anything on the field to simulate it. There's nothing you can do with, you know, there are certain things you can and can't do as you work out players. And you certainly can't put them in pads and have a live session, right? So without that, it's a projection. But I think what you do is you get every play from his career where he shows 1, 2, 3 progression, climb the pocket. Every one of those plays you can find, you put on a single reel. And I've started to do that, and there's not a lot. I mean, you got to separate them, and I've got some on 2014. But I think you try to figure out how many of those plays do you have, how is he doing that. My take on the kid is that his feet, his legs are so good, if it's 3rd and 4 and the primary guy is not open and there's a gap, he's gone. And you can't kill him for that. It's a first down, and he's winning games. He's chasing a national championship, right? So you can't kill the kid for that. But the question is, can he learn to be more judicious about how often he uses his legs? And while he does that, can he keep his eyes up and his focus downfield as he slides and moves? And you're not going to be able to. You're just going to have to buy into it because you like the kid and you think he's intelligent and will work hard.
Mike, we're going up to 5 o'clock, so we got 5 minutes left.
Okay, go ahead.
Mike, Tyler Croft couldn't participate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think it'll affect at all as long as he works out prior to the draft. You know, if he can go at his pro day, he'll be fine. And I think all the teams know he wanted to work out. It's just if you're hurt here, every coach and scout understands it. If you make a choice, hey, I don't want to do it, that's a different conversation. Sure. I thought he had a great day. And you know, when we talk about in the conversation for, could he play left tackle? I think he can. But I felt like on tape, when he got stressed by speed, he lost all of his fundamentals, and his arm started windmilling around, and he got perpendicular too quickly, and I just think he's a better fit. Even though he looked really good athletically yesterday, I think he's a better fit on the right side or inside, just like Zach Martin last year. He played left tackle at Notre Dame, but nobody's arguing right now that he's a Pro Bowl right guard. Damo? It depends who they're standing next to, okay, because the inside linebackers in that 3-4 kind of like a tandem. One guy has to be a thumper. The other guy's a little bit more of a run-free guy. So in Philadelphia, if you're trying to get the Kendricks brothers together, you kind of have, you know, two similar athletes. You really want a thumper and a will on the inside. Go ahead. Well, that's what he should say, you know, and I like, I have a chip on my shoulder. I'm still pissed off from 1981. So it's okay, you know, and I like that. It doesn't change the fact that if he runs 4.6 or 4.58, he's going to be a nickel corner. So what he needs to do is back that up on Monday and run something really good and say, I can play on the outside. He's still going to get banged for his size a little bit, but if he really wants to be a corner on the outside, he's going to have to run something to show it. It would help if they could put pads on and go against each other, but that's never going to happen. And the fear of injury and all the rest of that will never, ever happen.
Sorry, you said something really interesting when I asked the press. You said, you know, receivers are making a quicker impact now because of rule changes and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Does that apply for, like, a more complicated offense for, like, Andy Reid, where you know the verbiage is heavy? Does it still kind of...
Oh, yeah. I'm the statement I made that he's alluding to is I think that, you know, the wide receiver position was outstanding a year ago, and I think it's going to be really good again, not just because the receivers are so good, but because the big body receivers can come in immediately, be productive outside the numbers with the back shoulder stuff. And with the five-yard rule being enforced, the smaller kids can run routes knowing they get to the five-yard mark, it's hands off. So I really believe, regardless of the offense, you know, look at Matthews last year, the second-round pick out of Vanderbilt. He came in and had an outstanding year. So I don't think the verbiage and all that matters as much as just getting in there and playing. Right?
If you were a small receiver running back in the second group in particular, when you see a Langford run the fastest time, and Artis Payne be seventh Langford, you start to see a pecking order in that next tier. Who do you think is going to be 4-12 in the running back
group? As I said 1,000 times in the last 10 years, to me this is just kind of it doesn't change my mind on anything. It either reinforces to me that I saw what I saw on tape is confirmed, or if a guy runs faster than I expected, like Langford, I got to go back and check him out a little bit. So it doesn't change my pecking order right now. What it does is the guys that either run faster than I thought or slower than I thought, I go back and cross-check.
Todd, last two.
If you run a speed receiver, contribute right away to get him the first 4 rounds?
4 rounds you're going on me, huh? Speed receiver, yeah. I mean, it depends. Where's the University of Maryland kid, Stephon Diggs, going to go? You know, explosive kid with speed, return skills, quickness, the whole thing. You know, he might be a fourth or fifth round guy that could come in and compete. So I look at last year, and Pittsburgh got the kid in the fourth round, Martavis Bryant from Clemson, underclassman, right? They're going to be those kind of guys this year. But as you know, as you get deeper into the draft in the fourth and fifth, if there's five receivers taken in the fifth, there might only be one that produces out of that group. So you want to get the right one. And, yeah, I think there are going to be wide outs throughout the draft that will be productive. Yes. Yes.
Sorry. When you look at some of these offensive tackles, we're going inside, we can talk about this a little bit. Do you think that's going to be kind of the way of the future now? Do you think teams are going to be looking more toward doing that just to kind of ensure that
they're doing what?
Moving the offensive tackles to guards, kind of like the mark.
Well, I think they've always done that. Okay, I don't think it's anything new. I think it got a lot of attention this year because Zach Martin became the first Pro Bowl guard in how many years? First team All Pro. So I think it's generated a lot more interest because of Zach Martin, but it's been a fact for years that left tackles in the college level that aren't quite as athletic become right tackles or guards depending on whether they can handle the power inside. I think Scherf is another example. I think Lael Collins is an example. I think there's a bunch of guys I have notes on throughout my whole book about that were tackles in college, and I've got notes to see are they strong enough, tough enough to be able to handle inside. So thank you very much. Sure. My pleasure.